Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was just telling Troy, like, I'm not a podcast guy. I'm very shy. I'm a trained introvert. I was driven. I'm a coder. I'm an engineer. But I found that I have to speak. If bad people speak all the time, then people will just be bad. If good people speak all the time, then good people will be more. So I think that anyone who has something or has a certain story, they have to say it. Maybe someone gets inspired by this and you change his or her life. I don't believe in universities. I think 20 years from today, no one will go to universities, and people will learn from things like you, things like this. And this is where the real value is created.
This episode is sponsored by Greenwood.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Hey, Earners. Did you know that the black community has $2.7 trillion of spending power? Are you ready to see what you can do when you combine and recirculate our resources to expand the pool of black excellence? I know I'm ready. And that's why we've partnered with Greenwood, the in-demand black-owned digital banking platform. Greenwood's namesake was founded in 1906, built from the brilliance of black dreamers looking to create a self-sufficient community in the Greenwood district of Tulsa, Oklahoma, aka Black Wall Street. Today, Greenwood is a digital banking platform with the mission to strengthen the black dollar using the same community reinvestment strategies of the original Greenwood district. And it's powered by a best-in-class mobile app that allows you to bank from anywhere. So, Earners, if you're ready to build a new legacy of black economic achievement, go to bankgreenwood.com/EYL and sign up to be a part of the new Greenwood community. That's bankgreenwood.com/EYL. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
Welcome to EYL Egypt.
Yeah.
First and foremost, give yourselves a round of applause, please. Clap it up.
Yeah. This is pretty historic. For those of y'all watching, we actually have a live audience here with us, which is incredible. And we're on the top of the Ritz-Carlton in Cairo, Egypt. This is another historic moment for EYL. So again, round of applause for yourself for being here. We're going to make history again today, y'all, and y'all part of it. So thank you for being here.
Yeah. So we're going to get into it. But before we start, we got to give a special shout out to One Love Travel. Shout out to Javon and Chloe for putting this together. Dope black-owned company that is really changing the game when it comes to travel. So shout out to you guys. You guys are amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. They tapped in. The Earners are here. This might be a new standard. What do you think? This might be a new standard. Rooftops, river views. I mean, this is the new thing for us, I think.
Yeah, so we're going to get into this, but before we start, I got to say something because this is one of these moments, and I think it's important for everybody. We're going to put this on podcast outlets and YouTube, so people all over the world are going to be able to hear this, but you guys are here right now with us, and a lot of you guys, most of you guys, have been with us from the very beginning of our journey. Shout out to Ms. Business, one of our first alumni in the building. She was with us from the early stages, very beginning. And shout out to all of our friends and family that's here as well. Shout out to my boy B on the camera. You know, it took a lot of people to get us to where we at now, and we can never forget the beginning stages or the people that supported us at the beginning stages. And you know, it's very humbling experience starting in Troy's dining room. And, you know, in Westchester, New York, you know, a small town that nobody ever heard of. And we didn't really have any resources. We started with an iPhone and just the information that we learned on the fly. And now to be on the other side of the world doing a live podcast at the top floor of the Ritz-Carlton in Cairo, Egypt, in just under 3 years, just goes to show you that anything is possible if you put your mind to it. And, you know, things can change very quickly. So I just want to put that message out there because, you know, we're going to have a good time tonight. We're going to enjoy this. But let's not forget that we all have goals. We all have, you know, aspirations. And sometimes it can be seem like, you know, it's so far from being reached or being attained. But we're living proof that, you know, in a very short period of time, if you put your mind to it, if you're original, you work hard, keep God first, then anything is possible. So yeah, just keep that in mind.
Yeah, and this is super special. We started in my dining room. This is actually the first time my kids get to watch Daddy at work. So they always see Uncle Rashad and Daddy on YouTube, and they watch the episodes and they listen to them, but they've never actually seen us do it live. So this is really important because most of the times when we were shooting in the dining room, I was like, you got to take the kids somewhere. Take them somewhere. They can't make any noise. And so now they get to see us here. Very important. It's a special moment.
So we got one of the brightest, sharpest entrepreneurs, business minds in Egypt. This is going to be a universal episode that's going to touch on business topics that you can use in the States. But also, you know, our message is bigger than just America. We have listeners all over the world. So we want to expand the message and talk about things that's relevant all over the world, especially on the continent of Africa. We just came from Nigeria. So now we in Egypt. And, you know, we plan on visiting a lot of different countries on the continent. So this is going to be a message of a lot of information. So, yeah, you know, typical EYL fashion.
Yeah, I think it's dope because we could have brought people from other parts of the world and interviewed them here in Egypt. But why do that when there's already amazing talent here? And so when I was talking to Muhammad prior to starting today, he said, but I'm not a superstar. I said, don't worry. After this, you will be. In fact, you are, because you're doing things in the tech world that are amazing. And you're not doing it on the football field. And that needs to be highlighted. And so that's why we're here, and we're glad to have you.
Yeah, so Muhammad Abdul Naga. Did I say that correctly?
You got Abul Naga.
Yo, give me some. Right. You've been killing the pronunciation.
Yeah, you know, people always mess up my name, so I'm very cognizant of saying people's names right. So tech entrepreneur, fintech superstar, co-founder and CEO of Cleaver, we're going to talk about that, co-founder of Helon, which is Africa's super app, Egypt's most funded app in 2020, and also was the original director of Careem. Careem is the Uber of Egypt, and I believe that Uber actually acquired them for $3 billion. So we're going to have a very interesting conversation.
Don't let that go over your head. Don't let that go. $3 billion. Don't worry, y'all. I'm not... Muhammad said, don't worry, I didn't get all that $3 billion. So,
all right, let's get into this. What is Cleaver?
First of all, thank you for having me here. And I love the place. I love the Nile in the background. And I'm not a superstar, so I hope I'm not the worst one in all of your episodes. So I'll do my best to be okay. So Cleaver is a product that enhances the financial health of Egyptians and helps them know how to spend their money better and do it right. It's very similar. It was inspired by Nubank in Brazil, which is a big digital bank, and by Current in the States. And we're launching in a couple of months. We're building the infrastructure now. And the word comes from Clever and Cleva, which means going up. So it's a new word we just came up with to spend less in marketing. So it's a very special word. So we just wanted a new name to sit in front of our brand.
And your focus, you said, is focusing on the underserved. And so that takes a lot. It takes a lot of humility, but it also takes a lot of compassion. Is that coming from a background where you were at one point, or your family were the underserved, and realizing there's a deficit here and we need to change it?
Let me be honest. I was not really an underserved family. I come from a middle class family, but I always aspired for more. I always felt that our generation can do more than what they do. We don't have to be all either doctors or mechanical engineers, which is what my family wanted me to do. So I must say that I'm sort of an underserved, especially in dreaming, because we weren't taught how to dream in university. And we were underserved a lot in dreaming because we were forced to like find a way to find income, but not to help others find income. And I think the second one is what really matters to us.
Yeah, speaking of that, fine income, and one of the conversations we had prior was the average income for Egyptian citizens. Can you touch on that? Because a lot of times we got to put things in perspective. When we talk about poverty in America and we say 24,000 is the limit and people are making minimum wage of $15 an hour, you enlightened me when you talked about it. Can you just touch on that a little bit?
The average income in Egypt is not very high. However, the country itself is also not super expensive. But what we're aspiring to is to increase, and the companies we started, is to increase the extra income. So, for example, there are a lot of Karim captains, the drivers, we call them captains, that increase their income by driving by up to 3 or 4x their regular income. And in Fawri, for example, those shop owners increase their income by paying bills for others. And then Halan, delivery guys and 2- and 3-wheeler drivers. So I think that, yes, the average income in Egypt on a global scale is very low. However, you can live a dignified life in Egypt with much less than any other place in the world. And the things we're working on increase the extra income, which what makes people able to like pay for their sons or daughters' marriages, travel, buy cars, buy anything they need, because the basic incomes and the basic level of life in Egypt is very doable, but it's very hard to do extra stuff. And this is what we're trying to add to the people we work with.
So is this a combination of things? Because I see, all right, so we're going to talk about Helen. So Helen was that's the Uber Eats. No, Karim is the Uber of Egypt. So you had just mentioned something where the company Cleaver is a banking app. So you said to actually increase people's income. So it sounds very similar to what we talk about on the show a lot as far as multiple streams of income, side hustles, where in the States, somebody might be working a job, but then they drive an Uber for extra income. And then it's like, okay, now you make extra income, but what do you do with that extra income? You got to do something positive. Yeah. So now you have a banking act, which actually allows them to do something positive. So was that done intentionally, where it's like, okay, Karim, get more income. Now I'm going to start, you know, the fintech banking app where, you know, so many people are employed now part-time driving cars. Now they can actually do something. Now they have to actually do something with their money. So the banking app just makes sense.
It wasn't really planned, but however, this is how the market have been changing. Like in the beginning in Karim, we were looking at copying Uber, let me be frank. Here, we're not innovators.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
We just copy other things that worked in other countries, and we do it the Egyptian way that fits our markets, and we innovate inside the business itself. So we didn't do a robot that flies or an AI, whatever buzzwords, blockchain, things that people say to make people listen to them. We did something very, very simple, but we executed well. And in Karim, at a point in time in Egypt, we had around 100,000 captains on our platform. So this is 100,000 families making extra income. In Halan, we reached 200,000, which is 200,000 families making extra income. In Cleaver, yes, as you're saying, we're trying to improve how people spend and make it more transparent. There are no hidden spending. You have to know what you can budget for yourself. You can budget for your family. So if you have $100 and you use our app, you should be able to spend it in a more healthy way to make the best out of it. Yeah.
What was the process? Because you talked about you were working at Karim and then you had Cleaver. Just went out. Hello? Yep. We good? Yeah, you went to Cleaver, you had Karim, and then you hit Cleaver. So what was your background? Did you study engineering? Where did you get the bug for it? Or were you just watching YouTube university?
I studied electronics engineering with a minor in computer science in the American University in Cairo. It was just across the road from here. And I learned how to code on university, but I learned how to work in the street, in the business itself, because I believe that universities never teach you how to do the work. They just give you the basic stuff. And the real university is life itself and the learning of other people. So my managers and my mentors are the ones who taught me how to scale companies, how to use technology to grow. And yes, I come from an engineering background, but most of the soft skills that I learned in work itself.
So you said something that was very important. I want to get back to, because one good thing about traveling is that it opens your eyes and it opens your minds and it gives you ideas. So, A, you said that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I'm paraphrasing. And that's true. For any entrepreneur, a lot of times people feel like they have to come up with the next thing. But it's like, they pretty much copied what Uber did and they got acquired by $3 billion. So they got $3 billion by copying. So there's nothing wrong with copying. You just have to copy the right person first. And second, when you said as far as like, you know, being in Egypt, that made me think we just came from Nigeria. So we met a lot of Americans that was in Nigeria that moved from America to Nigeria, their family from Nigeria and stuff like that. And they driving Rolls Royces, regular, and they coming from Jersey, Chicago, just regular neighborhoods in New York. And they was telling us that they just served things that were needed in Nigeria. And there wasn't anybody actually doing it. Mm-hmm. So like we met a guy that's in cybersecurity. He's just a regular computer programmer in America, but now he's the head of the whole cybersecurity in Nigeria because there was nobody else doing it. They was outsourcing it to America. So he came and said, okay, A, I'm Nigerian. I can do it for cheaper. I'm American, so I could actually know exactly what they're doing. They're like, okay. And the guy's like running the whole thing. So I say that to say, sometimes we just think too small. You can't, and that's even with being out here, that's one of the reasons why we, you know, wanted to put this trip together is that you can't just think local. You got to think global. And there's opportunities all over the world, and there's opportunities right there in your backyard if you just look and think bigger. And like I said, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you can just actually do what somebody else is doing.
Take the wheel, make it your own.
Yeah, and speaking of this, like I graduated in 2009 from university, and most of the people who graduated from my major went outside working for Facebook's, the Monzos of the world. And I chose to stay here because I thought that there is more change that can be done here and within my capabilities. However, we learn a lot from others. Like we learned the model from Fauri, which the first company I worked for was based on a model in Brazil called Bradesco, which is very similar to it. Karim was based on Uber or inspired by Uber. Halen was inspired by Gojek from Indonesia. Clever is inspired by Nubank. So traveling and seeing other countries and learning from them, the ones that are similar in the DNA, like what works in Brazil should work in Egypt, similar. It's a big country with a big population, different socioeconomic levels. So this is very important to travel and to learn and to go back to your country and execute this in the best possible mode with the best resources and try to make a difference. And it usually happens when you do it well.
And you can also partner with other people from other countries.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another opportunity. We was in Nigeria. We spoke to Davido, who is a huge Afrobeats artist. His father's a billionaire. And he was telling us, he was like, you guys can come out here and just make a killing.
Yeah. That's one of the things. So when he looked at the merch, he said, man, I love the guy. I love your merch. I love the assets over liabilities. I love what you guys wear. Why don't you collaborate with Adidas? I'm like, yeah, it's not that easy, though. but you did say something important about collaboration. And so I want to talk about Halana just really quickly because it is a one-stop shop for everything. And one of the key factors is the e-commerce section where you have the buy now, pay later. And for everybody here, y'all know we've been talking about buy now, pay later when we talk about companies like Affirm, who did a deal with Target and Amazon, and we saw Afterpay get acquired by Square. Is that the long-term vision for you guys? Are you looking like, all right, we see that this is going to be successful, let's package it, hopefully get acquired at some point?
Let me be honest. The way Halan we thought about it is go to a certain target segment in Upper Egypt or in Delta and places that don't know the Amazons and the Jumias of the world, and we gave them a very simple product that does technically everything. Like you can It's mobility. You can use it for mobility. You can use it for making more money, for e-commerce, for delivery, for lending, for everything. So what we thought about is go to a certain target segment and just give it a super app that does technically everything. And we keep on trying. Speaking of buy now, pay later, I think that Egyptians here are a bit different from Americans in this area because we're not really, we don't have enough financial education to borrow money more than our capabilities. So what I think is better.
That's actually very smart.
Is that a good thing?
That's a good thing.
Because I personally, I think that people should know why they're borrowing and how they're borrowing. Like, I cannot be making $100 a month and I'm wearing a $500 shoe and I'm paying it over 6 months. It doesn't make sense to me. So what I think is more important is to educate people and tell them what they can afford and borrow for essentials, like borrow for education, borrow for for health. But buy now, pay later, I think that it's pushing people to spend more than what they actually make. And this is extremely dangerous in my humble opinion. So I think what's more important is save now, buy later.
So you mean like actually buy something that you can afford?
Yeah.
So if you can't buy it twice, don't buy it.
Yes.
That's a crazy way of thinking. Where'd you get that from?
Where in the world did you create that? My God.
Oh, man. Yeah, we got a whole system to just, don't worry about it. Pay it back later.
I don't worry about it. It's 10,000. Pay it 29%. Don't worry about it.
So you guys don't do credit cards over here, right?
We do credit cards, but credit cards are only for the super rich people. Like, they can afford, they have a very good scoring, they know that they can pay it, and they are able to pay the credit card 50, 60 times from their wealth and from their money. So as you say, assets over liabilities. So this is much more healthy. And I think that it's good for the economy, it's good for the people. Maybe people won't look as posh as what they should look, but it makes them better, and it makes them able to pay for their children better and pay for the necessities more.
So mobile bank, that's pretty much what your app is, a mobile banking app, right?
Yeah.
And you're targeting rural areas that are underserved, like unbanked areas, right?
The new one, Clever, we're targeting the high end. Halen, the one I'm still a shareholder, but I'm an executive, targeted the lower end.
The lower
end. Socioeconomic level, yeah.
Okay. So I noticed that the lower end, that's a common theme in Africa also, because I was watching 60 Minutes. There's one in Kenya that's really, really big. They use like this mobile banking app.
Yeah, M-Pesa. Yeah.
M-Pesa, yeah. Yes. Then there's one in Ghana. We talked. What was that one called? That was the one that David O was into. But I said that to say, it seems like this is a theme all throughout Africa where people in rural areas that don't have access to physical banks, this new cell phone technology to actually banking apps is something that we've been seeing and hearing a lot about.
Yeah, and the technology allowed us to leapfrog the banking. Like, we went from, in Africa, we went from cash to mobile banking, and many countries like Kenya skipped the banking itself, and you have more wallets than, I think, humans in Kenya. So this is because it's much more easier, it's faster, and honestly, I don't think banks are here to stay. Like, I think banks have to be disrupted, or they have to change, because the new generation doesn't want to go to a bank and stand in a branch and take a number. And it doesn't make sense that this user is paying for the marble branch rent and for the salaries of all of those people. Like, the mobile allows you to do everything at a much, much lower cost. So I think that mobile banking is coming over to eat up the whole banking industry, and digital banking will happen one way or the other.
Yeah.
Fintech, stocks, for anybody that watches Market Monday, this is why we talk about fintech so much. So the reason why I asked that question is that a lot of times we don't know what's going on in the world as Americans. We just focus on America, but you got to have a global perspective, especially if you're investing in stocks and companies. This is why we see, once again, and when we was in Nigeria, the biggest building that was there, who owned it?
Microsoft. Yep.
So, you know, countries all over the world are being affected, and you can't wait. As an investor, you can't wait. You got to stay on top of the trend. So I say that to say, fintech, mobile banking, this is something that, you know, you need to get ahead of. And if you're an investor, you definitely need to understand the companies that are putting a lot of money into it. And if you're a business, person, you should, you know, look into starting or partnering with these type of companies.
Yeah, and Muhammad's given us the blueprint, right? Like, look, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Go to a country, travel, see what's not there. Coming from, especially in America, we know what works there. We can implement it here. But I want to talk about, because you're on the board of a number of tech companies, what do you look for in a company to say, you know what, I want to invest, I want to be a part of the success of this going forward?
My latest investment was a company called Breakfast, which is like breakfast but with bread. Instead of, and they just raised $26 million yesterday, actually.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I have a very
nice... Nobody clap. $26
million? Yeah. This company...
It's tough crap.
All what they do is they have a couple of dark kitchens that started up by producing bread and automating 7 a.m. every day. You have your bread at your door. Started like that, but did it well. And then they're scaling into technically everything now. So I invested in this company because the users liked it. And this is the most important thing. If the users are happy, then you can ask them for more money, then you can give them more services. So whenever I find the users, whether they're B2B or B2C, are happy, I don't hesitate at all. This is the real thing.
You said B2B?
Yeah, business B2B, because some companies are business to business. Yeah. If the businesses are happy, then you're good.
Yeah.
B2C, if the consumers are happy, then you're good. So this is like Tesla. I'm a big fan of Tesla. Like all the Tesla car owners, they usually like, and they're very proud. They have to tell you that they own a Tesla in their own. And if they put this money in a Tesla stock, they would have made much more, but they want to own the car. So they like it. And this is why the company will just keep on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because the users are happy. And happy means a lot of money.
Let me ask you about crypto. How is crypto in Egypt? Is it being used? Is it accepted? Is it adoption? What's the vibe for crypto out here?
Crypto in Egypt is banned. It's illegal. And I personally invested in crypto back in 2011. I bought 1,000-something bitcoins by mistake, and I sold them by mistake.
Wait, 1,000 bitcoins?
Yeah,
wait,
back then. Yeah. But the
you
problem
sold,
is,
how'd you sell 1,000 bitcoins by mistake?
I'm a gamer. I play games, and we used to use it for buying things inside the game. So today, I don't put money in crypto at all, because I think that it kills how I see business, because it goes up very fast, down very fast. And it doesn't make sense to me that it goes that big. And I'm a fan of gold, so I'm the opposite of crypto. I think that everything has to be supported by something physical or something that supports it. However, it's a big market, and I believe in blockchain and DeFi, which is decentralizing everything. But crypto itself, I am afraid to reinvest in it. It's very risky to me.
Set 1,000. A hard drop.
Yeah.
I don't think this way. Like, speaking of doing multiples, Fauri, which is a company I had shares in, I sold the shares 5 years ago. Today, they're 160x what I sold in the market. But if I think this way, I won't be able to survive, because whenever you look back and you say, wow, if I did this, I would have made a lot of money. You'll spend your life like killing yourself and saying why I did this. So I just look to the front and keep going.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah, it's okay to make mistakes.
Some of us make more than one.
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
As long as we learn, right?
We all make mistakes.
I think you made, there's a certain mistake that's ringing a bell now.
Well, I was thinking about yesterday. You know,
okay.
The options, XLK, XLY.
Yeah, I'll let you tell the story.
We all make mistakes. We all make mistakes.
It's okay.
It's okay,
yeah. Let me ask you about gold. It's funny you say that, because we just came from the museum today, and it was, you know, obviously King Tut, and they was telling us about gold.
Powerful.
And everything is, they were talking about how, especially back then, gold was so abundant.
Yeah.
And it's just dust of gold just flying all over the place. So we're in the home of gold. So you said you believe in gold. Why do you believe in gold? Are you investing in gold? You invest in gold?
Yeah.
Physical gold? Or
yes,
a lot of people in this region invest in gold bars, like physical gold?
Yeah, like I invest in gold, yes. I invest in gold, but I put it in a certain place. There are certain companies that keep it for you here in Egypt. And I believe that gold is very important, because if you look at longer term investment, like 10, 20 years, and you look at the graph of gold, it's always going up. And whenever there is a problem in the world, like COVID or whatever, you find it even going up and up because it's
store value.
Yeah, store value, and it's very stable. And there is a limited number of amount of gold in the world. So, and also countries like a country like Lebanon, I think what's keeping it up till today is because it has a lot of gold reserves. So it's type of stability. And it's also important for long-term wealth because stocks go up and down very fast. There is a certain point in time last year, I gained a zero and lost a zero in the same year in my wealth, which was crazy.
In your wealth?
Yeah, because of a certain company. So this doesn't make sense.
Gained a zero and lost a zero.
I like that. That's a quote. That's a bar. We call that a bar. That's a bar. We taking that one.
So gold doesn't do this. Like, it goes up $50 per ounce, $100 per ounce at maximum, but it's very systematic and it's very stable. And I think it's good to have a certain part of your wealth has to be in something like this, in my opinion.
Are there any other commodities that you invest in outside of gold?
Gold, and I think that there are certain brands that just go up, like Rolex watches, Patek Philippe watches, APs, because the demand and the supply, it's very obvious. You cannot get one now. So I think they will just go up because luxury products are going up. You can see this from the LVMH stock. So those are also very important. I'm speaking about light assets. I'm not a fan of real estate, so...
Yeah, I only asked because we had a small conversation. And for those who don't know, I'll tell you, Muhammad is a huge Rolex collector.
I love them, yes.
But you said you didn't wear yellow gold ones.
No.
And so I'm thinking you collect gold, but you don't wear the yellow gold Rolex.
Yeah.
So there must be another commodity, maybe platinum, maybe silver. Where did the collection come from? Is that something as a child you said, I need to have that? Because we have a friend, I won't say his name, Mike, that also collects. Nothing compared to your number, but...
When I was in school, my mother when I do something good, she used to buy me a watch, not a Rolex, of course. So whenever I do something good,
I'm like, you owe me some.
Yeah, whenever I do something good, I buy myself a watch. So, and you have to clap for yourself because sometimes no one is clapping. So
why don't
another bar?
That's a fact. Why don't you wear gold Rolexes?
In Islam, in our religion, some people say it's... I'm not very religious, to be honest. But I just think... I like how white gold and platinum and stainless steel look.
It's just personal preference.
It's a personal preference, yeah.
You know, gold... You know, they were just talking about the Rich and Millie. How I think Meek Mill brought one for $250,000.
Yeah.
And then a couple months later, he sold it for $500,000.
Yeah.
That watch is running up like Tesla stock right now. There's a very limited amount of pieces in the world, and there's a unlimited amount of people that want to buy it. And the Rolex thing is interesting because when we was buying Rolexes last year, there was a shortage of Rolexes in America. You couldn't get it. And like, you would have to wait 13 months for a Rolex. It was extremely, extremely difficult to get Rolexes. Even now, there's not a lot of inventory. So speaking about investments, you saying that is very key. Rolexes, definitely a great investment. I know Mike, shout out to Mike, just got the Sky Dweller.
We can clap for that. He only waited 18 months, y'all.
Yeah. So sometimes you got to think out of the box. Everything can be an investment if you do it correctly. But stocks, you have an Egyptian stock market, right?
Yeah.
Do Egyptians invest in that, or they just invest in the American stock market?
They invest in the Egyptian stock market. Actually, Fawri is in this. Two out of the biggest 10 companies in the public markets are fintechs now, and Egyptians are investing heavily. I think the Fawri stock made around 7x since the IPO. 2 years ago, it's what, the 8th of August 2018. But the problem with investing in the Egyptian stock till now is that you cannot leverage the forex, the dollar. So a lot of Egyptians are trying to invest abroad in the S&P 500 and in other Nasdaq and other countries, but it's a bit hard because also because of the forex. Like, $1 today is 15.7 Egyptian pounds. So this is a risk, and it's a barrier to entry for external stocks. And Egyptians like to invest in things they can see. Like, Egyptians love to invest in real estate. You can find an average Egyptian owning 3-4 houses. Some are owning 100 houses. And they think that real estate is very good. So they're more towards owning something that you can see. So whenever it's virtual, it's hard. Like I was explaining NFTs in a certain conference a month ago, and people thought that I'm crazy buying something digital. They don't get this. And this is the problem also with stocks. They want to buy physical stuff like gold, watches, real estate. This is where they put the money in.
That's interesting, right? Because you're thinking future and they're thinking present. I have to see. Yeah. I need it to be tangible. I'm thinking about your career in business. It's expanded over 15 years. What are some of the biggest setbacks that you face staying here in Egypt, right? What are some of the difficulties that you face being a businessman here?
Like, let me be honest, half of my family lives in San Francisco. Like, my wife's family lives in San Francisco, and we go a lot. I go to Mountain View and to Palo Alto, and whenever I go, I feel like, man, what's happening? Like, my son was ordering something from supermarket. A small Starship robot came, and we opened and took the things. I couldn't get this, like, and then when we came back here, my son is like, where is the robot? I told him, it's not here. So this cannot be done here. If you put a robot on the street, the children will run after it and kick it, and it won't be logical. So whenever you're in the States or in Silicon Valley, you can do things that you can never do here. But here, the beauty is that you see the change. Like, I was doing a report last month because I had a little bit of a depression, and I was looking at things I did in the last 15 years. We found that we created around 2.5 million jobs, which is a very big number with the companies we did. And this is one of the very few things that keeps us going, because the regulations here are hard, the talent is very hard. Most of our tech today is based in Lithuania and India and Pakistan. It's very hard to find talent. It's very hard to find funding and money. It's very hard to find the right area to work in. So you have to keep on clapping for yourself and seeing the impact you created to keep on going. And this is extremely hard. So as long as we find this, we will keep on going. But maybe 10 years from today, you find me in Silicon Valley and ordering the robot and drones. And drones are illegal here in Egypt, for example.
Oh, okay.
You can't fly a drone here. So there is a lot of things that you just cannot do, and you have to face it.
Yeah, talk about that. You spend a lot of time in Silicon Valley, and compare the differences as far as like being able to be an entrepreneur. Like, it's more free range in America. Like, can you just kind of give some perspective to starting a business in Egypt, starting a business in America?
The problem here with starting a business is that it's not the norm. Like, usually the Egyptian typical mother will tell her son, go work in a bank or become a doctor or work in an engineering company. Starting a business is very risky, and there is a certain legal liability on you here when you start a business. It's not just financial liability, because of the taxes and how the laws are put together. It's very complicated. So it's not easy to start a business here. But however, it's becoming easier and easier as we grow. And whenever there are more success stories, like 10 years ago, there were no startups in Egypt. Zero. No startups. Just government companies and big businessmen, family offices doing company. Today, we have around 27,000 startups, which is a very big number. And in September, 2 months ago, Egypt was the highest influx of investments in startups in the region, $162 million versus less than $1 million a month 10 years before. So it's moving very fast, legislation moving very fast, but it's very hard and it's very risky. It's still risky.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm thinking to myself, obviously you said starting business wasn't a thing, so you become a superstar in this space, right? Because you are doing the startups. How big is mentorship here, right? Are you taking people under your wing? Are you finding people reaching out to you to say, yes, Muhammad, you've done it. Can you now teach me or teach my son or teach my daughter, my family?
Yeah, like 2 days ago, I received a call from someone I don't know. He told me, I want you to mentor me. I told him, what do you do? He told me, I do this, this, and this. I told him, man, you're better than me. Why are you calling me? So I think that mentorship is big in Egypt, but you have to choose the right mentors. God served me with the best possible mentors ever in the last 15 years, and they taught me how to do work. But there are also the other side of mentors. There are people that you don't want to be like, and those are also very important. Like, I remember some people during my 15-year career, I don't want to be like them. So whenever I do something and I find that Can you hear me? Whenever I do something and I find it bad, I say, no, I don't want to be like those guys. So I think there are mentors and there are like, don't do this. And both are very important.
So, Helen, the most funded app in 2020, how much money came in?
$134 million.
So how did you go about raising that money? Where did the money come from?
At the beginning, we had a very big time raising money because we work in a field that was illegal, which is the three-wheelers. Egypt has around 2 million three-wheelers, which they call tuk-tuk, and they're all illegal.
Like bicycles?
No, rickshaw. They call it. That's like a motorcycle, but bigger. If you go like two streets inside, you'll see a million in one street. They're like cockroaches. But the problem is...
You know those.
Yeah, we're familiar with those. The problem is that they are in the country and they're moving in the country, but they're illegal. So whenever we tried, and we were doing ride hailing, which was illegal, for tuk-tuks, which are illegal. So it was very hard to raise money.
Everything you was doing was illegal?
Yeah.
Perfect.
My type of guy.
And then a certain investor that invested in Gojek in Indonesia knew that they had something similar, so they gave us money. And the family office here gave us money. And then we started to become bigger and bigger and bigger until one point, and I don't know why this happened, everyone wanted to invest with us. I think it's a set of stuff like good branding. We did a very, very famous song called Selkat, has 55 million views on YouTube. And we did a lot of work on the ground.
Like a theme song?
Yeah, it's like a song, yeah. And we opened markets of Sudan, Ethiopia, and it was one of the very few Egyptian startups to go abroad. Usually Uber is coming to Egypt, Microsoft is coming to Egypt, but an Egyptian startup to go to Sudan and Ethiopia, this was new. And then money started to come in, and a certain company we started to merge with other companies that do complete the process. Like we do the technology part, other ones do microfinance, other ones do consumer finance. So we created like a bigger ecosystem, and this bigger ecosystem is now profitable and has technology. And this is what made people really want to invest with us. But we spent like, I met 132 investors that said, no, we won't invest with you. But at the end, today it's the most funded app because it works.
Few things that I got from that. A, you didn't let 132 people that say no deter you. That's very important. And then B, you said you collaborated. So you realized that you might not be the best in every single area. So you can focus on one area, partner with another company that does that. And you could break that down on a micro level as far as our entrepreneurs. A lot of times people try to do everything themselves, but they look at like they don't want to give up anything, but you can partner with somebody that might be better you in a different area. And it's less money, but it's going to actually grow your company faster because they're adding value.
Yeah. Like speaking of Kanye West Yeezys, Kanye is not a manufacturer. Like Yeezy is just a marketing company that creates good designs and collaboration with Adidas, and I love them. So, and people buy them, and if they're standalone, they're a big company. So he knew his strength, he knew how to do it, and he went to someone to do the part that he doesn't know how to do. And I think this is great, like Beats by Dre. Dr. Dre didn't go and manufacture the headphones. So I think this Apple is a marketing company. It's not an electronics company. It's all made in China and the chips are in Taiwan. But at the end of the day, you want to put the Apple on your MacBook to look trendy. So you have to know your strength and know other people's strength. And this is where partnerships wins.
Yes, you said Yeezy.
Shout out to Yeezy.
A huge Kanye fan. In fact, he said I wore the Yeezys today for that reason.
Shout out to Yeezy.
But I want to go really quickly because I'm listening to what you're saying, and we went over the if it's not broke, don't fix it. But you were the creative director at Careem, and now Hanan has ride hailing. So did you take what you learned and said, all right,
let yes.
me, right? You didn't have to go to Uber. You said, let me take where I'm working from right here and let me go make it there.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened?
I copied a lot of what I learned, and I don't think it's something wrong. As long as it's not legally wrong. And this is where experience is built. Like, you'll find all the people in Egypt creating infrastructure companies worked for infrastructure companies abroad. But Highland today, ride hailing doesn't represent 5% of the company. So we just found an entry to the market, and then we grew. Like when you look at Tom's Shoes, for example, I think they found an entry by the one-for-one model. But at the end of the day, people don't care, like they just new Toms. So we started by a three-wheeler ride hailing, which was very similar to what Kareem did, but for cars. And then we expanded into everything else. So you do what you know, and then you expand on things that you learn.
Do what you know, and then expand into things that you learn. That's very important, because even like you had a job, essentially. And you know, a lot of people have jobs, but then, you know, being an entrepreneur, you can take what you learned at your job, what you know at your job, and develop a business based off of your training that somebody else actually trained you up for.
Yeah, and like PayPal, they call it PayPal Mafia, which are the people who started from PayPal and did companies. Kareem here, they call it the Kareem Cartel. This is what they call it. And like more than 50 people from Kareem went out and made their own companies because they knew that it's possible, and they got some money from Kareem, and they knew access to talent, and they just started doing their work. So you have to learn from others and do it. Like I'm a huge fan of Elon Musk, for example. I think that a lot of people from Tesla will go out and do electric things, electric cars, electric drones, whatever, because this is where you learn. So it just makes sense.
Speaking of Kanye, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Rockefeller, shout out to Dame.
Yeah.
You know that tree. And then Kanye's tree.
Yep.
Look at Kanye's tree. Virgil.
Don C. You got Big Sean on an artist standpoint. You got John Legend from that tree. You got Common from that tree.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many.
Fear God, Jerry.
Jerry Lorenzo.
Yep, yep, so yep. All these guys come from Kanye.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So before we wrap, what's your expectations? Are you hopeful for the future of Egypt? In 10 years from now, we come back, we do this interview. What do you think the future of Egypt looks like? I know it was a lot of, you know, things that have happened. You guys had a revolution not too long ago, 10 years ago. If you really think about it, like we talk about the American Revolution, that's 1776. Egypt Revolution was 2011. So it's still a lot, I'm assuming, still going on. So How's the pulse of the country, and how optimistic, and how do you feel about the future of the country?
The amount of roads, new roads in Egypt in the last 7 years built are more than the amount of roads built in the previous 70 years. So the infrastructure growth is exponential, and a lot of people who were working abroad came during the COVID to work from home in Egypt and stayed. So talent is moving up, infrastructure is moving up, economy is moving up. And there is a lot of non-stability in countries around us that are letting people choose us by elimination for investment. So those are all good things. I think the only thing we need in Egypt is foreign investment and foreign learnings, because this is something that we lack. And this is something that would be a great differentiator. And speaking of America is a huge country. I think you cannot compare it to Egypt. But there are certain cities in America, like Cupertino has Apple. It's based on Apple. And then you will find a place like Mountain View is based on Google. And then you go to Seattle, you'll find Amazon, and you'll find Starbucks. So I think that if those companies like the Fawaris of Egypt go up and the Highlands of Egypt go up, the whole economy will go up. So 10 years from today, I think it will be much better.
When we spoke about the job creation, and I don't want to gloss over it, but that's huge, right? Are we talking throughout the country or specific parts of the country, right? Cairo obviously is a huge city, I believe over 20 million people. Are we talking other regions of Egypt, or are we specifically talking here in Cairo?
The beauty of Cairo is that here, this tower, Four Seasons Tower, an apartment here is $5 million, up to $50 million. And right here, you'll find an apartment, the same space, for $50,000. So things are very close here. So when you create jobs everywhere, because the beauty of the Egyptian population is that they're all weaved into each other, and they're all married from each other and into each other. So when you create a job, a certain type of job, it just goes everywhere. This is genius. Yeah.
So you said that you're not a fan of real estate, but you just said that the Ritz-Carlton has $5 million apartment, goes up to $15 million. So, A, why are you not a fan of real estate, and how is the real estate market in Egypt? Is it booming right now? Is it going up?
Yes, it's going up big time, but I think that the value created by money in the business is much higher than the value created by money in real estate. This is a personal opinion. And I like to invest in things that create value, because money is a byproduct. Money is not a goal. You cannot wake up in the morning and say, today I want to make 200 pounds. This is not how I see it. You can say, I want to create value, and this value will create 200 pounds along the way. So I think that real estate, it's not my thing. I'm a tech guy. I believe that technology is very important. And I come from a generation that doesn't really like ownership. Like, we're changing how things are happening. We want Airbnb, you stay in 1 week and then go to another thing. You use Kareem and Uber. Everything is like on-demand sharing economy. So I think that the real value is to pay money in platforms and companies and things that create more and more and more and more value. And real estate, I'm not a fan of it, honestly. I think that it's, you're putting money in a blocks of concrete that if you don't want to use it, then don't buy it. This is how I see it. But I'm a very, I'm a crazy person, so don't quote me on this. Yeah, my wife thinks that this is stupid, for example, but it is what it is.
Yeah. There you have it. Different strokes for different folks, but you have to go on what you're passionate about, what you like, and what you, you know, believe in. And there's no money like tech money. So
tech money today, but how long will it stay? So maybe 10 years from today, there is a new thing that's called something else that takes over the tech hype.
Metaverse. How do you feel about the metaverse?
I'm afraid of it because I'm a VR user. I'm a heavy VR user since it went as a commercial product. And I love it. Honestly, I love it. And it takes you away from the world and it makes you do whatever you want. And this is scary.
Yeah, you know,
are you afraid because of escapism? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like whenever you feel like you don't like your family, you can put on the goggles and see another family. So it's very risky, you know.
A friend of ours, shout out to 19 Keys, he said he tried the HoloLens of Microsoft. It's not out yet, but it's like the Microsoft glass. You know, HoloLens of Microsoft. Yeah, yeah. And he said, it makes reality very boring.
Yeah. Makes I use the Quest, which is the Oculus, the Facebook.
Yeah.
And I always buy the new one. And I play games on it. And I use, I watch YouTube, if you watch the 360 VR videos of cities, there is a certain one of Hong Kong, there are many of them. You feel you travel there, which is very weird. And you move and you feel that you're going to touch people, and whenever it improves, it will become just better and better. And it's scary, but we have to face it. There are two ways to expand. Those billionaires have to expand. They're either through space, going to Mars, or through the metaverse, because they have to create their own universes. Okay. And this is very tough.
You said you were a gamer, so I'm going to go back to it. What were you playing? What were we playing?
I play Warcraft.
Okay.
And
okay. You're a real gamer.
Yeah, and I love Call of Duty. I think it's anger management more than anything.
He's the guy who's cursing at me every time.
You said something that was very profound. And this is, I know Ian will love this. Shout out to Market Mondays. You said billionaires have two options of how they can expand. In the universe, the actual universe, which that's why we see Tesla, Elon Musk, SpaceX, and Jeff Bezos and all these guys fascinated with space. And then in the metaverse.
Yeah.
And that's why we see Mark Zuckerberg and now Microsoft, and Phil Knight just filed for the virtual trademark for Mike. So that's kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, they're moving in two different universes, the metaverse and the actual universe.
Yeah. And the trillionaire, the first trillionaire will be the person who takes the most traction. Like, if people want to go to Mars and they're willing to pay $1 million to go to Mars, Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos will be a trillionaire. If people want to pay $10,000 and use an Oculus, then Mark will be a trillionaire.
Well, you know, it's so crazy, right? How much is Elon Musk worth right now?
Estimated $300 billion.
So he's worth $300 billion right now, but they already have him being on pace to be a trillionaire, not based off Tesla, based off StockX.
SpaceX.
Yeah. And SpaceX, is it even profitable?
It's not even IPO yet. So the vision is if it IPOs.
But that's what I'm saying. They said it's going to have double the value
of Tesla. But maybe the new trillionaire will be someone we don't know, who does something new. You never know.
Maybe it's a fintech guy.
I don't know.
but that just goes to show you the expectations for space exploration.
Yep.
If they're already valuing a company that's not even public more than Tesla, then they're already expecting that to be way more valuable than Tesla and it hasn't even really taken off yet.
Yeah, we've seen the companies. We saw Tesla is still trying to do it, but Virgin Galactic, same thing. They try to do it. They're trying to, remember, I told you, they were like, King of Comedy was like a joke when Cedric the Entertainer was saying, like, yeah, they're trying to leave us and go to Mars. Like, no, that was 1997. It was a joke, but like, no, this is really happening now. And so if we don't get ahead of it, if we don't become a part of it. I feel like it was the same thing when we had the Bitcoin conversation in 2016. We were like, look, if we don't tell people about this, we're doing ourselves a disservice to our community, right? Like, we need to make sure everybody knows so that they don't get left.
Yeah.
And so, like, the fact that we're talking about it now is the same concept. Like, we got to make sure that people understand what's happening so they don't get left. So, like, when you're talking about NFTs and we're talking about the metaverse of people, it's not like, he's crazy. No.
Well, were we talking about flying cars yesterday? We just had this conversation about flying cars. If you watch the Jetsons, that was just with you, right?
Right here.
We had a conversation right there. There's a company that just filed a patent for a first flying car. They already have the technology, but it's just not leaked. But long story short, it's already in the works for the first. So when we watched the Jetsons, that was like,
it's crazy.
But it's one of these things where
Back to the Future, same thing.
Everything that's in a movie is gonna happen eventually. It has to. They already thought of it. If the human mind could think of it, that means it's possible. So I say that to say the first flying car will probably be out relatively soon.
Yeah, like Black Mirror is real.
Yeah.
And Ready Player One is real. Like, someone has to be inspired. Yeah.
Wow, there you have him.
Gotta come back with us. He's coming back with us. Can we bring him back, y'all?
Muhammad, it's been a pleasure. What would you like to tell the people? What would you like to, to talk about the company a little bit, your social media handles, all of that, and any last words of encouragement, any last words for Egypt?
I was just telling Troy, like, I'm not a podcast guy. I'm very shy. I'm a trained introvert. I was driven. I'm a coder. I'm an engineer. But I found that I have to speak in order for others to know, because there is a certain bandwidth to humans. If bad people speak all the time, then people will just be bad. If good people speak all the time, then good people will be more. So I think that anyone who has something or has a certain story, they have to say it and they have to talk to people about it. And maybe someone gets inspired by this and you change his or her life. And honestly, what you guys are doing is genius, because I don't believe in universities. I think 20 years from today, no one will go to universities and people will learn from things like you, things like this. And this is where the real value is created, because I'm an engineer who's now sitting on a podcast that had Shaq O'Neal before it. Doesn't make sense, but because you chose to let me sit here and say my story, so you have to say your story and speak to others. And although I'm really shy now, I'm afraid to look to people in their faces, but I have to train myself and I have to overcome this and move out of my comfort zone. And thank you.
Thank you. EYL Egypt, soon come.
This has been magical.
Don't be surprised if we have a chapter.
I looked back and I saw the sunset and I got lost for a second. It was incredible. I'm sorry. Did y'all see it? Yeah. I got a good picture of it? You got me? My man.
It's a beautiful place here.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, beautiful.
Now, this is amazing. Thank you, guys. I saw
my graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.